The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
And Michael Kelly is with me, First Lady journalist, former editor of the Irish Catholic, and Mary McCarthy, columnist of the Irish Independent. They are here for the afternoon update. And folks, we might start on that front. So kind of tensions growing seems to be the narrative over this. Mary, one would suspect this will eventually kind of end with some sort of deal hammered out in the way they always do. Should we have foreseen it, though? Should policymakers have foreseen this happening?
Well, I mean, with the open border, this is obviously one of the consequences of having an open border. But there was no way we could have a border up north. It's not like Germany and Poland. You know, it's too, there's people going to the chemist there, going to school there. It just wasn't possible. So possibly you're right. Maybe we should have. But we didn't, right? But Sunak, he's just playing this for his advantage. I mean, I think Irish politicians are coming out of this much better because they haven't used it for their political advantage. But I wonder, is he lying a little bit? Have the Conservatives mucked up the economy so much? And that's another reason why people are coming here. Because, I mean, the barber in that where my kids go, he's Algerian. He said he couldn't find a job in the UK. That's why he came here. He's illegal. So I wonder, I think Sunak is really using this. We've become a political football. And I mean, I don't know. Back to your question, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think Sunak's going to budge. I mean, his point about France, about what, you know, we can't send the boat people back to France. So why should you send people back to us? Like, he's going to stick to that.
He is. And I look, it's not often I kind of cut him some slack, Michael. But I can see why he might be taking some pleasure in being able to say that. The French took great pleasure in being able to turn around to Rishi Sunak and say, there is absolutely no legal obligation on us to take back anybody to France who has migrated by dinghy to the UK. And for him to be able to turn around now and say, well, same applies to Ireland.
No, for sure. And I think he's probably delighting a little bit in our squirming around this because, you know, of course, which I fully supported, a key plank of our reaction to Brexit was to ensure that there would be an open border. I mean, the reasons for that are well rehearsed. I mean, it was not an exaggeration, even though it infuriated loyalists when Leo Varadkar said that if you put people in uniform at border, north and south, you're going to make them targets. And also the fact that we, again, quite rightly insisted that any deal on Brexit would have to be done with the entire EU, that there couldn't be these side deals or back deals. So, you know, I think Sunak is kind of using that to his advantage now, saying, well, you know, Ireland's part of the EU, France is part of the EU, so, you know, France won't take people back from us. We're not going to take people back from the Republic. I mean, one of the things that has surprised me about this is how quickly this has moved. I mean, it seemed like a week ago no one had any statistics like this. And certainly Helen McEntee drops this in the Oireachtas Committee. And yet you have the Taoiseach last night saying that, you know, this 80% figure is not really based on data or statistical analysis.
Well, it strikes me as well, there's an overlap with another story I mentioned that we're going to come to later in the show about hospital appointments, and we don't have the computer systems to track what's happening. That's one of the kind of the lessons we've learned in this as well, is that when people are interviewed, be it at the border, at the International Protection Office, or at ports or airports, they're asked about how they've gotten here, what countries they might have travelled to, but that data is not recorded in a way that makes it searchable. In other words, they write it down and it just stays written on a page somewhere.
Yeah, I was stunned by that.
It's amazing.
So basically, they're just being asked out of curiosity. You know, it's not something that we're doing anything
with. How'd you get here yourself today, Michael? A nice journey.
Came on the
list.
Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah,
nice trip.
Really good.
Small talk, basically, is what they're recording. So, we to a degree, I guess what that speaks to, Mary, is that we don't know what problem we're trying to solve if you don't have the data.
It does feel like there is the unknown. We don't actually know enough. I actually went down to Main Street there this morning. I mean, it's incredible what's going on down there.
All the tents.
Yeah. It's incredible. And there's the other side of the road now. I came to 37 tents and they weren't there a couple of weeks ago. And you can see the presence, the media down there, like France, you know, the French papers have jumped on this story because, you know, they just... And today you could see there was AFP were there. You could see there was lots of
David Astarik interest in Rwanda as well.
Exactly, so that's it, yeah. So, I mean, you know, this story could potentially really blow up. It really could.
And the local elections and everything that's happening, I mean, that's the backdrop as well to all of this from a UK point of view, isn't it, Michael?
And Sunak has nothing to lose here. I mean, if you look at the polling in terms of a general election, which will probably happen in Britain at some stage this year, I mean, I don't know what Keir Starmer would have to do at this stage for the Labour Party not to, to win the election. Talking about the Tories potentially losing hundreds of seats. You know, so Sunak has an incentive here to be quite reckless about this. I mean, he's not going to be in a place where he wants to cut a deal. I think that he's probably trying to insulate himself at the moment from a Tory revolt over these local elections because, you know, they're going to lose a lot of councillors up and down the country. And, I mean, look, as far as he's concerned, if he's not on course to win a general election anyways and damage limitation. And these kind of, I mean, the right wing of the Tory party likes these kind of rows as well. I mean, that clown Jacob Rees-Mogg was out this afternoon saying that, you know, illegal immigrants should be bussed now from Britain to the border with the Republic. So, you know, that's all playing into the hard right there. And the Tory press in Britain, of course, is loving backing up
Telegraph.
Their people in this as well.
The glee coming off the Telegraph.
Yeah.
I mean, once solution is you get the UK and Europe to sign a kind of another version of those Dublin protocols whereby people kind of get sent back to the first safe country that they passed through. And that would be advantageous to us and certainly the UK. I assume the problem, Mary, you would have is that, you know, southern European countries would balk at this because they are the countries that people would end up getting sent back to.
Well, this is it in Greece. Like they've put up with a lot. We do need an effective, it's only going to get worse when you look at like Sudan and there's huge issues and climate change conflict. There's going to be a lot, millions more people on the move. So we need policies that work, but we also can't be in a place where people are sleeping rough with no sanitation. I mean, the UN say 20 people to a toilet. That's kind of basic. And I mean, how many people are down there in Main Street? There was two Portaloos came last week. And then they were taken away 2 days later. That's what I found out today. Some guy from Eritrea told me, and I checked it. I corroborated that with a volunteer who was working down there. And she said, yeah. So, I mean, it's outrageous what's going on. And you can see Sunak is going to love this. It's perfect for him. It's perfect. He has messed up the economy. Like real wages haven't grown since 2008 in Britain. So he has mucked up. This is something that he's done right. The Rwanda scheme is working. Look, they're all going to Dublin. Look at these tents, you know. And then you've got the Telegraph, just it's completely false what they're reporting.
Well, it all comes back to Brexit as well, because the Brexit dividend didn't happen. You know, like all this, you know, Britain going to be like free trading around the world, doing deals here, there and everywhere. I mean, the few deals that they've done have been extremely modest.
Paltry.
The hundreds of millions they were talking about being able to pump back into the NHS every week because they were repatriating that money from Brussels. I mean, no one in the NHS has seen that either. So I think you are talking about a spectacular mismanagement of the economy, of course, not helped by Liz Truss's brief. Kind of a calamitous time in office.
She didn't really have that long, though. You know, I kind of feel she gets really bad press, but she didn't really have that long.
Well, she didn't last as long as the lettuce, famously, that the Sun newspaper were tweeting pictures of every day. So she certainly didn't get a long time, whatever you think of her politics. Listen, it's something we're going to come back to later on. Pascal Donoghue is going to be here. He's actually joining us on the show today, ostensibly to place his favourite book on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. But of course, we would ask him a little bit about this and what might happen. That's coming up after 5 o'clock. Dublin Airport car park is already booked up, it looks like, for the summer. And I flew in and out of Dublin Airport, Mary, over the weekend. And I flew over and you look out the window and there's just a massive, big, empty lot, which is the Quick Park car park that should be used. And it is just, I just beggars belief that we have a situation now where people are going to be leaving their cars on residential streets in and around kind of Portmarnock and Swords and places like that. And there's a massive car park empty beside the airport.
What is going on with that? Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, actually. I was flying in
the
there.
Competition, well, the CCCP told the DAA they weren't allowed by it. They would have a monopoly on car parking around Dublin Airport. There needs to be some competition.
That is quite
depressing. It remains empty. So they still have a monopoly. There's no extra person involved. They still have a monopoly. There's just less options.
Well, that's where I was surprised when people said, you know, they could charge what they like if they haven't had a monopoly. I thought that's what they were doing at the moment already.
Exactly, yeah. I know that they have a monopoly. It is absolutely mad. And I see, you know, the DAA are out today kind of talking down the problem. This isn't an issue because obviously they want people to still book flights to come through Dublin Airport. I mean, if it wasn't an issue, I don't know why would they be trying to buy an extra car park in the first place. So there's a hole in their logic. But it does speak to, and you lump in the metro and everything else with it. I mean, infrastructure, we're not great at kind of public planning and infrastructure, are we?
Okay, so it's embarrassing the metro hasn't been built, but I do think that people should make more of an effort. Okay, I know I live very, I live in Ranelagh, right? So we even just got a new bus service. So we have the Air Coach and then now we have the 783. But there is a lot of people who drive to the airport and they don't need to drive. And I do think just bring less stuff with you. You don't need these big suitcases with 12 outfits. You really don't. And get public transport. And yes, okay, that public transport in some areas is not adequate. But I do think there's a lot of people with adequate public transport and they're not getting it.
That's why we should have burden sharing. And those of us who live in Dublin should take the lion's share of the burden. Because we can get, I mean, I live in Dundrum. I can get to the airport in 40 minutes on like a really cheap bus. But,
yeah.
You know, if you are outside of the greater Dublin area, it can be difficult to get to the airport. And I mean, I know.
Sorry, this is a great idea. Parking should only be for people outside the
M50. No.
I like this idea.
I can see Kieran's eyes are lighting up.
I'm loving it already. Yeah, burden sharing. You should be on the bus.
This is the kind of things that we need. You got to like smoke people out of their complacency. And like, Michael, yourself and me, there's no reason for us to be driving to the airport.
No,
we've got buses
not.
Coming out, you know, everywhere. And you can bring kids in a bus. I brought kids into town at 5:30 in the morning. Last summer, we went interrailing and the whole thing was not to go in a private car for the 3 weeks. So we actually got the Lewis at 5:30 into town. Then we walked across town and got the 41. And it was a bit hairy now. There was a few hairy
individuals.
5:30 right, okay, in the morning on a Saturday morning walking through town.
A holiday you can derail the first leg.
I just wanted to show it could be done, right? My sister was like, oh my God, Mary. But it can be done. You just need to really...
Where did you go interrailing?
We went all around. We went to France, Germany. We started off in Brighton. We got the bus. We got the boat. And where else did we go? We went to 4 European countries.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you'd recommend it with the kids?
I'll be writing about that, actually. It's going to be in the interview.
Yeah, she'd be very coy. That's why. Exactly.
No, I would definitely recommend it. Although there are a few drawbacks as well.
Yeah. Not least of which is walking across town at about 6 in the morning.
Yes, that's it.
With them. Anyway, listen, we'll come back to Dublin Airport a little bit later. A much more important issue we've got to talk about, which is unisex bathrooms. So, I mean, it's funny, the idea of unisex or gender neutral bathrooms, I mean, they obviously kind of form part of the whole kind of trans debate. And as such, then they've been kind of consumed by the culture wars. And who knew that what would spell the end of them is actually just men are dirty. They don't wash their hands, apparently. Women do not want men in the bathroom because we don't wash our hands, Michael.
You know, I'm really embarrassed about this because a number of women have kind of asked me about this today. You know, why don't you men not wash your hands? And I'm like, excuse me, I do. I'm not a spokesman for all other men. But look, I think... I mean,
you don't have to wash them every time.
Well, this is it. See,
come on.
Well, as the night goes on in the pub, you see, I think people get a bit more reckless about these things. And that's why during COVID, you know, we could only stay for like 90 minutes because we'd be kissing each other and hugging each other as the night went on.
So. But if you order chicken wings, it's grand.
Yeah, it prevents it.
Yeah, no, like, but you can definitely get away without washing your hands, can't you?
So, see, I said this now to my husband and his first reaction was, but pee is a disinfectant. So
exactly.
It's kind of in certain, you know, it depends what you're doing in the bathroom and that's when you wash. And this is, I think, the problem. So this study, 23 European countries, hospitals in 23 countries, including Ireland, and they found on the staff, on the handles of the staff toilets, 8 times dirtier the men were than the women. I mean, I don't know why anyone would go into a gender neutral bathroom when you've got the choice, because I don't really like them at all. It's not that I don't feel safe or anything, but I just want to go and put on my makeup and not feel, you know. Anyway, that's beside the point.
But here's the issue, Mary. Like, if you were at the mirror, you'd be putting on your makeup at the mirror where the sinks are.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be grand. Men are not going near those sinks.
That's true.
That's the point.
Yeah, you're absolutely fine. You see, you're missing the point here. Like,
okay.
You should be welcoming the fact that we just walk straight out. We spend very little time in there, in and out.
Don't even wash. That's why the queue. If you go
in
like in a bar, you can see there's hardly a queue. But in my own house now, I have 3 sons, and they don't wash their hands. I'm forever saying I didn't hear the water tank didn't kick off. You didn't wash their hands, and they just don't. Whereas my daughter always washes her hands.
Michael, I would say this: that joking aside, what I'm always amazed by is when you just kind of put your hands. The amount of men who will turn on the tap, put their hands under it, then turn it off, and then wipe their hands like in the back of their trousers or something. I mean, unless you actually wash them, you're just moving the dirt around in your hand. It's not gone anywhere if you just wet them and just wipe your backside.
I mean, look, I've seen guys as well flick up the tap, you know, and kind of move their fingers around quite a distance from the tap and then put it down and walk out as well. So there's a bit of virtue
signaling.
They do
that when they hear it. They know there's other people there. Yeah.
Well,
I have to wash on Michael's in here. I better wash my bloody hands.
I have a worse story in the gym. A lady did that. She put on the tap and she didn't even put her hands under. So it was more just the acoustics. She wanted people to think.
Yeah.
And little did she know I was watching her, but I just noticed that she didn't even put her hands under the tap.
You should have shamed her.
It was a quick tap on, and she did the powder and then...
I wonder as well, the proportion of men who do wash their hands, which we now know to be small every time based on this survey, it would be smaller again if there were individual toilets with sinks, because you wouldn't have that peer pressure. How many of the men who do wash their hands only do it because there's another man in the bathroom and they think they'll be judged for not washing their hands?
Only that it would be kind of pervy. You could do like a hidden camera show on
I don't know about hidden cameras in bathrooms, Michael.
Ensure you can watch those guys who are there by themselves.
I don't know if that's ever justified.
it's a great idea for News Talk. anyway, listen, before I let you go, because we are going to be talking to Bill Whelan, as I said, a little bit later, Eurovision. 7th of May, I think, is the first semi-final. Will you be watching the Eurovision?
You know, I only tune in now for the results because, and not that I'm actually particularly interested in the results, but I really, really enjoy the variety of characters from around Europe who are chosen by the national broadcasters to read out the results. It's quite a tour, and I actually really feel sorry for the presenters because they're always trying to shut the people down who are making a speech.
Yeah.
So that's the only part I really tune in for now. And, you know, it's not as interesting as it used to be because the way they do the weighting of the national juries and the public vote and all that kind of thing, it changes quite dramatically. I prefer the old way.
Mary, are you going to watch it?
I will definitely watch it.
Do you love it?
We make a huge fuss of it. You can split the country in two. Yeah, no,
and you're one of them.
We make a huge fuss of it in our house. We do the Eurovision draw. The kids love that Icelandic band. Do you remember that a few years ago?
Sorry, you do a draw so everyone gets different...
Everyone gets different countries.
And then everyone has to do a shot. And their country gets 12 points.
No, this is like my kids. I don't know what goes on at movie night in your house. But, we do. We love it in our house. And like when you were saying, Michael, in the old days, it was a little bit more exciting. Because I remember just the pure magic of it. Johnny Logan, I think that's probably remains my favourite. Hold me now, because he won twice.
And the phone lines would always go down. You know, they'd be saying, Reykjavik, please come in, Reykjavik.
Oh, yeah. There was a little bit of kind of... like unpredictability. Do you know that Ireland won like four years out of five?
Wow.
At one stage. Where was that? Yeah, I wrote it down. 1992, 1993, 94 and 96.
Wasn't that what the famous Father Ted sketch was about then? That the reason why Ted and Dougal were representing Ireland in Eurovision was because RTÉ couldn't afford it for another year.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, listen, we'll come back to the Eurovision in the context of Riverdance, which is 30 years old today. Bill Whelan, who was the composer of that music, is going to be with me in about 30 minutes time or thereabouts. Mary McCarthy, columnist of the Irish Independent, Michael Kelly, journalist, former editor of the Irish Catholic. Thank you both very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.